Welcome to Audible Insights, brought to you by the Insights Association, the leading voice, resource, and network of the marketing research and analytics community. With our host, Paul Kirch, research industry veteran and business leader, and our amazing guest lineup, we'll uncover actionable insights and creative new ideas that you can apply to your own business so you can stand out from the competition. Here's Paul Kirch.
Today on Audible Insights, we've got a great guest. He's a brand marketer, venture investor, and startup advisor. His name is Dave Knox, and he's bridging the worlds of Fortune 500s and entrepreneurship. This intersection of two worlds is the subject of his book, Predicting the Turn, the high-stakes game of business between startups and blue chips. And he's an upcoming speaker at our next conference in New York in May 2018, so if you're not signed up to attend, you're going to want to do it. Dave is the former chief marketing officer of Rockfish, a widely recognized digital innovation agency that was acquired by WPP, where he served as managing director for WPP Ventures. Prior to Rockfish, Knox was a seven-year veteran of Procter & Gamble, where he was instrumental in the digital turnaround that led to P&G being named the Adage Digital A-List. So we're super excited about having Dave Knox on the show. Dave Knox, welcome to Audible Insights.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hey, we're really honored to have you on. You've got a great book out called Predicting the Turn, the high-stakes game of business between startups and blue chips. And it's really compelling because I don't think there's a lot of people out there really kind of making that tie between the startup space and the, you know, Fortune 500. So it's really compelling. What motivated you to write this book?
Yeah, so for me, I've always said I have kind of a conflicted personality, if you will. Because, you know, I spent most of my time in the Fortune 500, first at Procter & Gamble, and then most recently as a CMO for a digital agency called Rockfish that worked mostly with the Fortune 500, companies like Ford Motor Company and Unilever, et cetera. But with that, you know, I was spending my nights and weekends engaging much more with the venture capital and entrepreneurial community, both as the co-founder of a startup accelerator called The Brandery, but also as an investor, both as an advisor to venture funds and an angel investor myself. And so I lived at the intersection of these kind of two worlds. And what I found was they had more, frankly, in common that they could learn from each other than that set them apart. And so I wanted to write the book really for that very purpose and make something that could be as equally appealing for somebody at a major company as it is for an entrepreneur or a venture capitalist thinking about these two worlds.
Yeah, when we think about the marketing research world, are there some interesting tie-ins between what you're seeing in venture capital and potentially leveraging marketing research? Because it seems like that's always been an area that is maybe underutilized.
Yeah, so I think what's interesting with market research is it this focus on innovation and disruption and pick any other buzzword out there you want to. It's actually increasing the opportunity for market research to take a leadership role in the company. And what I mean by that is engaging in looking where things are going and using research and all of the different tools that it has at its disposal to help guide your company and, you know, predict the future of where things might be going. It creates a tremendous opportunity that's not just about validating, is this TV spot going to work? Or what's our volume forecast for this new launch? Or what's a consumer insight around a need? It's really helping guide your company of how might our consumers and our industry and our business be vastly different in the next 5 years because of what we're seeing today. And I think that's an opportunity for market research to almost think about becoming the futurists and the trendsetters for their business.
So now when you were at WPP and Rockfish, were you pushing market research in this type of direction?
Yes, without doubt. And it was, I would say, market research really in the concept of insights and what can we glean from the activity that we see happening today that might not necessarily matter for our bottom line, but could have dramatic consequences down the line. And, you know, the example of that is you look at subscription commerce. You know, today, think about your own credit card. How many subscriptions do you have on there, that recurring monthly cost? You know, rewind 7 years ago, it actually wasn't that dramatic. But what we saw 7 years ago was the rise of these of-the-month companies, you know, Dollar Shave Club and BarkBox and Birchbox and, you know, a bunch of companies with Box in their name. And I think the best market researchers and the insight leaders at their companies were actually recognizing that that behavior and the fact that there were 50 different startups that were funded with about $300 million of venture capital at the time, they were actually looking at that as insights into consumer behavior. And it was something, you know, at Rockfish, we were spending time talking with our clients of this is an early indicator of something you should be paying attention to. You know, I kind of use the analogy, it's the startups can be the canary in the coal mine for the right researcher to indicate there is something happening here that we need to pay a lot more attention to.
I look at the innovative nature of a lot of startups out of Silicon Valley. They're deeply funded, but that's in contrast to obviously the bootstrapped companies that are just trying to find a way to make it through the first year to create a business that's, you know, obviously got some sustainability. Are there some, I guess, lessons that can be learned for these companies that maybe don't have deep funding and they're in a situation where they're really in a bootstrap that can help them be successful and get off on the right foot?
Yeah, I think they definitely can, because the great thing about today's environment is you think back, if you wanted to do any really research back in the day, you had to spend a decent amount of money to be able to field a focus group or to do a survey that really had the right number of people behind it. And today, you can do that in so many new different ways because of the tools at your disposal. You know, being able to run a survey or a poll up on your Facebook page, be able to spend a few dollars on Twitter or Google ads and drive people to a survey response, or just even frankly ask questions out to social media. It gives a real ability, I think, in new and different ways for even the scrappiest of companies to find those that insights. So I think that's point number one. But then point number two is that a lot of these insights into where an industry might be going, we are in probably the most open environment we've ever been in the sharing of knowledge and information. And so you can see the funding behavior. You can see sectors start to get hot because of the investments being made. And it's developing that breadth and depth of your knowledge by just being attuned to what's happening out there. The information's never been easier to get in a way that we never could before. So I think that's a powerful for any individual at companies big and small alike.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And it's interesting to look at the marketing research landscape because obviously we've got some larger progressive companies that they're able to do things maybe financially. They've got the right teams in place. And then some of the smaller, I don't want to say mom and pop shops, but a lot of them are. And they've really spent the last 20, 30 years kind of surviving and maybe growing at a small pace. But now we're in a place where everything is changing around us so quickly. There's so much innovative opportunities. There's so much emphasis on social media. You mentioned some of the progressive ways that people can actually get research done that really don't necessarily fit the model of a lot of the service provider research firms. Are there some things that maybe somebody out there that's got a smaller company that hasn't always been known as progressive that they can do to kind of compete on a larger field as the world is continually changing around them?
Yeah, I think there's a few different things that can really be done. One is that as research becomes easier to do because of all those tools I mentioned, quality becomes that much more difficult. And true insights versus just research and numbers becomes that much more difficult. So I think somebody can really distinguish themselves by that depth and going beyond just scratching the surface and really driving those unique insights of, yes, here's the data, but here's what I'm seeing by reading into it and how I'm connecting the dots in different ways for your business. That becomes even more important because it is so much easier to just get numbers, but I think it is more difficult to get great analysis. So that would be number one. And then I think number two is that nimbleness that, you know, especially if you're a smaller company, you know, going against a big company, you know, whenever you look at startups never attack head on. They find a flanking behavior. They find a way to do the thing that a big company might not be willing or able to do. And I think a smaller company can do that same thing in research. What are the things that the others, those big competitors of yours, might not be willing to do
either because their business model doesn't allow it, they are not used to it, they have a way of doing it, and find those things and use them to your advantage by doing the things somebody else isn't willing to do.
I think innovation can be an expensive process. If you're innovating and trying to convince people that they need something that they've never known they needed before, that can be very expensive. Do you find that innovation is best suited for the larger, well-funded companies, or do you find that innovation is something that really should be embraced by everyone?
Yeah, I think innovation has to be a behavior of everyone, and it's got to be a behavior that is segmented. So I'm a big believer in the monitor group, their matrix of innovation. And what they do is they break it down saying there's core innovation, there's adjacent innovation, and there's transformational innovation. And I think too often we think about that word innovation being those big grand slam, swing for the fences, change the company that does require a ton of money to do because it's new to the company, new market, new consumers, you know, et cetera. You know, think about something like Amazon with Alexa and what they've done with voice. But core innovation can be just as vitally important to a business because with all this constant change and all these new things coming in, if you're not innovating around the very core business that you're in, chances are that others will be and pulling your today's customers away from you. So I think it's really important for somebody, a company and a business, to think about that breadth of our portfolio and making sure you're innovating in every area and you're devoting the right percentage of dollars, expecting the right percentage of outcomes.
I love that. And you know, an innovation doesn't necessarily have to be, like you said, externally offered. It could be innovating your processes internally, better refining things, your sales process. Are there some good examples you can think of where you're seeing some innovation happening on the maybe some of the smaller startups or smaller companies that excite you?
Yeah, well, I'll actually start with a big company example of, you know, to the point of innovation doesn't necessarily have to be sexy to work really well. And so, you know, back when I was at Procter & Gamble, we worked with Walmart, for instance. And one of the insights we found for them that was really driven by market research was that the average Walmart shopper, you know, she, and most of the time it was a she, devoted, let's say, 1 hour to her shopping trip. And because she was so busy stacking up so much in her day, if she got done with her shopping list early, it didn't mean she was going to leave the store. Because, you know, she might have matched it to, I have 2 to 3 o'clock to do my shopping, and then I pick up the kids at 3:05. And getting into the shopping, you know, done shopping quicker and into the parking lot sooner didn't really help her out. And so what they found was that she'd spend that time truly shopping, you know, going around off the list to see what was there. And one of the insights that came out of that was if the health and beauty aisle was moved next to the grocery aisle, it would actually allow her to shop for things that were higher ticket item, more, you know, incremental to the basket size. And that was something that ended up driving a tremendous impact on the basket. And, you know, one of the first test markets was actually down just north of you, I think, in Farmers Branch. So it's a really interesting thing to look at and what it can do to take an insight and use it for an innovation that I don't think anybody's going to brag about moving health and beauty next to grocery being this massive change the world, but it sure changed the bottom line of each of those individual stores. So I think that's how I think about innovation is it can be the spectrum and sometimes the smallest can actually be the biggest.
Yeah, so I want to step back and talk a little bit about maybe an area that a lot of people, I guess, will say really neglect when it comes to innovation, or they don't think innovation ties to it, but that's their sales and marketing process, or especially their sales process. And a lot of our listeners are marketing research executives or people that are really influencers in that space. But there's a lot of concern about larger companies, Fortune 500s, that have kind of lost confidence in marketing research results. They're not leveraging it maybe the way that they once did. I think there's maybe a little bit of resurgence and some exciting things happening with some companies that are really embracing it. But are there some things we can do as marketing researchers to, I guess, get a better seat with the Fortune 500 C-level execs and other C-level execs across the business landscape?
Yeah, I think it comes down to really kind of evolving how we think about what that role is. Because, you know, the problem at times is we have the hero worship that comes in that has a negative impact on market research. And what I mean by that is, you know, the emergence of somebody like Steve Jobs, who was pretty vocal of, you know, the consumer is not going to be able to tell you what they want. And the problem is those sound bites actually get misused and misinterpreted, and they get taken in the wrong way to look at. Because you take somebody like Apple, you know, if you look at their supply chain, they have to be pretty good at forecasting demand and how people are going to buy an item and everything else. There is a lot of research and insight that goes into that predictive behavior. And so the words get misused. And so when we're faced with that, I think it comes back to going back to the core DNA of what are we doing and how can we help and what does the business really need? And, you know, in today's world, we're seeing this emergence of predictive analytics and predictive research. That, I think, has become more important than ever, because we have to be in a world that your marketing plan, you don't just set it for 6 months and forget it. You have to be changing it on a daily, you know, weekly and daily basis, if not even an hourly basis. So research can really help understand the differences there. What do we think is going to work? How can we change? If you're not making those decisions in based on strategic insights, you're just going to be scattershot all over the place and changing every single minute just because something's, you know, telling you to do it. So I think a researcher can be that sound of reason, if you will, of here's what we've learned, and here's how we think that's going to impact the spend we're about to make or the initiative we're about to launch. So you can bring that kind of calm to the very chaotic sea.
Yeah. What about the people that we're working directly with in those organizations? How can we help them be more successful so they can get a better seat and really, I guess, create more of a sustainable opportunity for research within organizations? Are there some things we can do to help maybe those people in middle management roles or in team roles that are really trying to influence upstream in a company?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of cases, it's got to be connecting the dots. You know, sometimes I think research can end up a little bit unglamorous in that people might not be willing to kind of say, look, here's what we predicted, here's what we saw, and here's what the decisions were made out of it. It becomes a foundation, but it's a foundation maybe doesn't get the recognition it deserves. So I think part of it is in this noisy environment, it's important to tell the success stories, to talk about how research really did either affirm a decision, change a direction, make a difference, and be okay with bragging about it a little bit and do it in a humble way, but tell the story and be proud of the difference that was made. Because I do think that's important. And it's a story that's not told often enough. You know, what led down a certain path or to make a different choice because of something that was discovered and unearthed that really became a groundbreaking insight into a business decision, which it feels weird to tell somebody to brag a little bit, but I do think it's important because we need to tell these stories. And frankly, we need to hear these stories on podcasts like this and on stages like Next New York.
We're talking to Dave Knox, author of Predicting the Turn. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Did you know that damages relating to cybercrime are expected to cost businesses and individuals $6 trillion annually by the year 2021? As handlers of massive amounts of data, market research and data analytics companies face enormous risk as potential victims of a devastating breach. To help members best secure their data, the Insights Association provides, through a separate entity called CERC, auditing and certification to the ISO 27001 standard. This certification is being demanded by an increasing number of corporate research departments. So, not only can ISO 27K certification secure your data and save your company from a crippling hacking incident, it can also secure your additional business. Learn how you can shore up your data protection with a strategic information security framework and at the same time garner a credential that elevates you above the competition. Visit insightsassociation.org/infosecurity for more information. That's insightsassociation.org/infosecurity.
Welcome back to Audible Insights. I'm your host, Paul Kirch, and we've got Dave Knox, author of Predicting the Turn and a upcoming speaker at our next conference in New York. Let's jump back in. Depending on when people listen to this, you are one of the speakers at the next event taking place in May in New York, and we're really excited to have you on the docket there because I know you're going to bring a lot of great value to it, as you have to our show today. What are some things that people that will be attending can expect to take away, or I don't want to steal your thunder for your speech, but some areas that they can be looking to walk away with some insights?
Yeah, for sure. No stealing of the thunder. So, you know, there's a few different things that I hope people will take away from stage. You know, the one thing is going to be How do you think about the second order consequences that are coming out in the business environment? And how can researchers help lead that? And what I mean by that is, you know, a decade ago, two decades ago, most companies had a pretty heads-on battle with another large company. You know, it was Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, Ford versus Chevy. And today, while we still have to pay attention to those direct competitors, we're actually seeing things happening across business that might even be outside of our core business and outside of our control that can have dramatic impacts on our business. And researchers and insight leaders can actually be the drivers of helping to uncover those. You know, what is something like the launch of the autonomous car going to do to short-term hotels? What happens around businesses that were built around interstate exits if I don't necessarily have to get out at an interstate exit for human needs like in the past? Those type of things. And how can those second order consequences play out on our business? So that's going to be kind of one takeaway. Then the second takeaway is really going to be, what does that then mean to how our competitive set changes? And how do we position ourselves to be thinking about investments today that can help us in tomorrow and where that we're going? And then the final one is going to be, how do we look at this world of innovation, whether it's startups or venture capital or patent filings even, to be guiding our companies to predict the how and the when the future of your business and your industry is going to happen? And what do you do with that? And how do you guide? And how do you actually step up into even more strategic leadership at your company when it comes to that prediction of where things are going?
Yeah, I love that. And I think anybody out there listening that was on the fence about going to that event, you definitely should reconsider, because obviously that sounds like a phenomenal topic. And we really appreciate you being on the slate there. So as we, you know, get close to wrapping this up here, Dave, we really appreciate your time. But I'm curious if there's an area or maybe some areas that maybe you have some concerns about that you would like to see maybe the research industry addressing, or any areas that you think are holding back the research industry. I don't want to focus on anything negative, but quite frankly, I think there are some opportunities for us to make changes. Are there some areas that you've had your own concerns with?
You know, nothing I would say that is dramatically out there. You know, I would love to see a little bit more embrace on some of the newer models out there. That one of the things that I think can be the dangerous side of research is that research can sometimes be a crutch for a major company. And they have tools that make them feel very comfortable of, you know, well, our volume forecasting is based on these last five years or these last 10 years. And, you know, we have these certain tools that we use because we have made sure that they're validating the data and we've looked back through. And what that causes at times is some really innovative solutions that I think actually might turn out to be even more effective than tools in the past get dismissed because it requires more work to validate them. And it takes somebody, frankly, putting their reputation a little bit on the line to say, no, this is a better way of doing it. And we really should try and attempt it and bring in this company. And I'd love to see that more embrace because it is such a power and those tools could be better if we kind of embrace it and move forward with them.
What do you think is holding back companies from taking that kind of a stance? Is it more that they're just afraid to put themselves out there? Or what do you think is maybe an anchor there that's keeping that from being more reality?
You know, I think it goes back to the old adage that, you know, nobody ever got fired from buying IBM that we heard back in the early days. And today, when you have done the last, you know, let's say 30 initiatives based on a volume forecast because of Nielsen, well, it's tough to say, actually, I think this other thing might be a better way for us to do this forecasting. It's having enough confidence in yourself to say, this is better, let's take a shot. And doing it now could benefit us tremendously for the next 10 times we do this. But it's being willing to stand up and say, this change is worth it, and taking this risk to explore something else is really the better approach.
I love it. Dave Knox, we really are honored to have you on Audible Insights. Can you tell our listeners how they can learn more about you and connect with you?
Thank you very much. No, you can visit me on my website at predictingtheturn.com. You can also check out the book on Amazon or at my publisher, Paramount Market Publishing. Both have the book available. And you can always follow me on Twitter at Dave Knox or sign up for my newsletter that's listed there that's called Predicting the Turn Insider.
Folks, depending on when you listen to this, I encourage you to go to the next conference in New York, May 2018. You will not regret it. Dave is going to be on stage, and I guarantee you're going to get some great insights from him. So once again, Dave, thank you so much for being on Audible Insights.
Thank you very much.
I sure hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Dave was phenomenal. I love the perspective he brings to this. This bridging of the gaps between Fortune 500s and the startup space is absolutely fascinating to me. And I think some of the insights he brought for the marketing research world were something that everyone on this should be paying attention to. So once again, we thank Dave Knox for his time today. Once again, my name is Paul Kirch, host of Audible Insights, and I want to pay a special thanks to the Insights Association. Through this show and other means like the insightsassociation.org, you're going to find a lot of ways that they are advancing the insights and research industries. So we thank them for all their contributions and everything they do. And if you want to learn a little more about me, check out my other show, Boss Academy Radio, at bossacademy.com, where we focus on real business ownership success strategies. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have an amazing day.
Thanks for listening to Audible Insights, a production of the Insights Association. We empower intelligent business decisions through our support of the marketing research and analytics community. Learn more about our advocacy, code of standards, education, certification, and the many services we provide to businesses and professionals at insightsassociation.org. And if you'd like to reach out to Paul Kirch directly, email him at paul@websitesandleads.com. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have an insightful day.